Get ready to rack to school at your Nordstrom Rack store, because the deals are amazing. Levi's, Adidas, Volcom, and Hurley from only $20. Save on everyone's favorite denim, sneakers, boots, backpacks, and more at Nordstrom Rack. But hurry, get first dibs on new arrivals from just $20 and make it the best school year ever. Great brands, great prices. That's why you rack.
Welcome to the Rand CRE Show, commercial real estate with no stone left unturned.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Rand CRE Show. I'm your host, Mike Taravella, and have the privilege to be with the man, the myth, the legend, Will Coleman. Will, how are you?
Howdy, Mike. Just running the marathon one step at a time, and I'm excited. We found the HD button on our camera this morning.
So. Yeah, new year, HD us.
We've been doing a podcast for a year, and we just got the HD going. So now, I'm very excited to have our guest on the show today. We've got Nate Trunfio. He's the Senior Director of Sales and Marketing at Lima One Capital, a private mortgage lender providing innovative funding solutions for real estate investors for purposes of fix and flip, new construction, rental loans, portfolio loans, and multifamily value add. Lima is very unique in all the products they offer. So Nate, welcome to the show.
Wow, what an introduction, and thank you both. I'll say, glad you guys got HD, because I mean, we got the great flow from Will, and look at that awesome Wheelbarrow Profits hat from Mike over there, man. So no, it's a pleasure to be here and certainly honored.
I say, for those who are listening, it's doing you a disservice because Nate's looking out his beautiful corner office at Lima One right now.
Yeah, there's a long line waiting too. So,
yeah. So thank you so much, Nate, for having some time, and would just kind of love to hear what, you know, talking a little bit before, but the lending market. I mean, 2020 was a weird year, and now we're head first into 2021. So we'd love to hear kind of what you're seeing in the market right now.
Yeah. So a lot of ways to answer that question, but it's been a wild ride, right? That's something very cliche when it comes to 2020. I mean, we literally went from slamming on the brakes after gaining so much momentum in early in the first half of Q1 to literally most realms of multifamily financing halting. You know, you had your agencies that were still there to, you know, as they're defined to be, to bring liquidity to the market. They still brought liquidity to the market, but most of the other middle market bridge and CLO-based, CMBS-based debt balance sheet, debt fund lenders, everybody either took a massive pause or halt or significant slowdown. So it's been a wild ride. Fast forward now, I mean, man, the doors are back open. I can get into more specifics on sort of comparison of terms pre-COVID to now, but we're right neck and neck to where we used to be in most levels. You know, I'll hint a little bit at some of the further detail. Proceeds hasn't quite gotten back there on the bridge stuff, but I'm pretty confident it will be with a lot of the stuff that's going on in macroeconomic environment and stimulus package related. But yeah, it's been wild for sure. You can still get financing. I can talk a little bit about what's harder to get than before. But it's still a lot of business going around for the amount of transactions that there are. And certainly happy to talk about what I'm seeing on that side too.
Tell me about the, right when everything hit, kind of what the discussions were being had around the bridge market. I mean, I was very involved on the agency side, and basically all the bridge loans we were working on, almost every single bridge lender was like, yeah, we're pulling this product for now. What was kind of that process like for you guys?
Yeah, it was wild process, man. And you know, the key word of all COVID is uncertainty, right? So, I mean, it stemmed at the root of uncertainty. But really, you know, the two biggest reasons why there was so much disruption was because of one, capital markets and secondary markets. And I can describe more about what that means and what happened there. But essentially where most lenders get their money from, when you put the money bin on the top shelf for the kid that they can't reach into it, it's hard to put any money out on the street. So that certainly happened. And then the other, you know, logistical challenge was like in bridge, right? Bridge is going from A to B, right? But how the heck do we get, what does B look like? How do we get to B? The path is a lot less defined. You know, what underwriting assumptions do we use? How much, you know, rent growth do we use? Same as before or less? What's going to happen with cap rates and pricing? You know, so the whole, how do we underwrite bridge deals, knowing that a product and a property is going to go from A to B, it was really hard. So that's why we've been, you know, most lenders have had to ease their way back into figuring out the sweet spots of what assumptions to use and to not. But that was really it. It was one, the money, and two, just the underwriting. And then look, you know, there wasn't much going on too. So it's not like we could see a lot of transaction data to say, oh, the market's going here or there, because we see all the money going in these pockets and spots, you know, whether secondary, tertiary, class A, B, C, what have you. We just didn't have that to go off of. So, you know, all that stems from uncertainty, but it really went to the root of the cause of where the money was and how the heck do we underwrite these deals.
And now the bridge is starting to come back. And you guys, I mean, have definitely been quite active and quite busy, and honestly, some of the better terms that I've seen in the bridge market, probably the best terms I've seen. What kind of metrics have you all seen that it allowed you to start easing back into it?
I mean, my easiest answer is we actually got to see metrics, you know, where before it was just like a blank slate. But, you know, we're just trying to figure it out. So as much of, you know, we've been able to see some transactional data and where things are going, whether that's like flatline, they're staying where they are, great, maybe trending down in some areas, but not really much. So trending up in a little area, just being able to see that has been, you know, really what's allowed us that comfortability. And then coming out of the woods of COVID, you know, we've just learned a lot, right? And we've also know that the biggest risk in anything is the unknown, right? So when COVID slapped itself on us, you know, we had no one in the world knew what the heck to do. So there was so much unknown. Now we know, right? I mean, I read the other day, what if another wave hits, it's like the fourth wave or something like that. Like I thought it was one whole big wave, but you know, on these subsequent waves of COVID, we know a little bit more about what to expect, how the markets react on, you know, the operator side and transactional side. And then in the behind the scenes money markets as well. And then I didn't do a good job being a salesperson. So Lima One, we provide predominantly bridge loans right now. We're working on rolling out some more permanent financing in the SBL space, but soon to come. So on bridge loans, we'll do value add where we'll finance, you know, CapEx on properties that we have zero in place debt service coverage requirements. So it could be low occupancy and heavy amounts of renovations. We can certainly find a home for that. And then also we have a bridge stabilized product, which is essentially not formally stabilized to the 90 for 90 rules in agency, 90% occupied for 90 days. We're more in the high 70s to 80% occupancy is what we consider stabilized. So it's for the further lease up plays, you know, you just got done with the heavy reposition, you know, and now you're further leasing up. That's where we fit and find our void. And then I would be remiss to say, if you have a multifamily bridge deal, you got to go through my guys at Rand Capital, because you have been screened and scrubbed by us, as we do with all of our broker partners. And by us doing that level of scrutiny, we're able to make sure that you get, you know, top sort of tier pricing so that you guys can make a couple bucks. I mean, look, real estate investors, everybody's in it to make some money. But at the end of the day, using you guys with us giving you wholesale rates and fees, you in turn can offer what we in turn could offer to a customer, because we value working with, you know, educated and sophisticated guys like yourself. So wanted to plug us, certainly plug you guys, but bottom line is we're here to provide solutions on deals going from A to B using bridge loans. And realistically, our sweet spot is the small end of 5+ units, as low as 250,000 loan amount, up to, you know, whatever unit size, typically 10 million is like the upper end of the range, but we're starting to see a lot more opportunity, 10 to 15 million, because just other lenders in the middle markets bridge space are just really tight. So they can't get to proceeds that we can, and other things of that nature. So I hope I did it justice on at least my attempt at a sales pitch there.
Yeah. And, I mean, I had heard y'all's name before. I certainly knew Nate, and, I came upon Lima One because we were quoting a bridge deal through another lender, and Lima beat us on terms. And I was like, I've got to figure out who this lender is, because, you know, those are good terms. Would you be willing to kind of briefly go through, you know, let's say it's a $4 or $5 million bridge deal, 75% occupied, kind of what terms you guys are seeing in the market now?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, that's music to our ears. I'll make sure I tell our head of product development that comment, Wilson. Thank you, man. I use the word sweet spot a lot, but the sweet spot in loan amount size, from my perspective, is like 1 to 7 million. But again, we go lower, we go higher. It's just finding the right solution. So let's talk what we call value add, where you're financing some amount of capital expenditures, CapEx budget. We'll typically be able to max out at 80% loan to cost. So that's purchase plus CapEx times 80%. On all our multifamily bridge products, it's a 24-month interest only loan. No prepayment penalties. We do have 6 to 12 months of minimum interest. Rates on the product, it depends a little bit on loan size, but over $1 million, we're typically anywhere from mid sixes to low sevens, but we're trying to stay in the 6.5 to 6.99 bucket for that size loan amount and max leverage. And we're a max 70% as stabilized value once you complete the business plan. So that's when you finance CapEx. On the stabilized stuff, very similar, except for we're typically on a purchase, we're 75% LTV on purchase price, about 70% refinance when you have a mortgage on an existing. So whether that's rate and term or rate and term and a little cash back to you. And then if you own a property free and clear, it's a little lower leverage, around 55, 60% LTV. Rates on that are very similar, 6.5 to 7%, 24-month interest only note. I think I covered it all.
And then you guys can close in, you know, 30 days if need be, right?
Look, you know, surety of execution is the name of the game in the bridge space. So, you know, we take a lot of pride and emphasis on that. As we were talking a few minutes ago, we also take a lot of pride in putting our best foot forward and one that we know we deliver on. It's not to cast shade on others, and I certainly won't mention names, but, you know, operators got to understand there are differences between a term sheet and an LOI. Is LOI is more committed from the lender and certainly has gone through further due diligence. Most front-end salespeople have the ability to offer term sheets at their own discretion. So you can sort of put one and two together. When the salesperson's underwriting the deal, it can be a term sheet, and LOIs are fully underwritten. And honestly, we prefer to put out LOIs to where our analyst team has done deep due diligence, because the last thing that we want to do, and we have a great track record of avoiding this, is the detrimental word of retrading, right? That's the worst for operators to get that designation from sellers, and it's certainly the worst for lenders, and we don't liken that at all. So we very much make sure our LOIs are essentially what we know we're going to be able to show up to closing with.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, as an operator, that's the biggest thing, right? Because your investors, everyone thinks of the LPs, but your debt is the biggest investment in that deal. So and I've seen too, a lot of operators the last 30 days, bank goes, hey, sorry, it's too old for us, even though they know it on the front end. So you hear these horror stories and you never think it'll happen to you, but it might. So just making sure you're aligning yourself with high quality executors, not just talkers, right? So making sure they're putting their money where their mouth is to execute and to build a long-term relationship with you. It's the cliche of, it's a relationship business, but Nate and Will are, you know, always going to go to bat for you and making sure that you get the deal done.
The only good thing about that really disgusting situation is we end up scooping up those deals. So like we're big on Freddie fallouts, right? You know, we had a deal in December. We literally closed in 10 calendar days. It was a Freddie fallout deal. So we had a full package on everything from appraisals, environmentals, to way more than we would even need on the borrower underwriting side. And we got up and down in literally 10 days with the holiday mixed in there. It was a phenomenal feat. You'll see it on our social media because we were really proud of that execution. It's super important.
Don't expect that. Get all your stuff in on the front end though.
Thank you for saying that.
That's something we do as a brokerage. It's helpful for the borrowers is, you know, we'll get all the information from them and we actually put a, you know, 3 to 5 page summary of the deal. And that way we can send it to Nate and his team is able to very quickly look through it and understand the deal fully, and it lessens the amount of questions, and the underwriting team is very thankful that there's a summary of the deal, and that helps speed along the process in terms of getting to that LOI stage.
Look, that's why I was hyping you guys up, not only because you can deliver just as good, if not better terms than we could directly, but because your presentation of deals goes a long way. It gets us to a quicker answer and a certainly more sure answer on what we can do. And so that's why we love working with you guys. So thank you again for that. I really appreciate it.
Shout out to Steven who makes those loan packages.
I say you'd be stuck in Nate's waiting room still trying to get it in. So, but that's the thing. Sure. It's just, it jumps it, right? Nate doesn't have to worry about who the borrower is because Will's proofed it, right? Made sure it's viable and they can execute. So it's just that stamp of approval. It just goes a long way.
And then something that's interesting about, you know, we talked about putting the money on a pie where the kids can't reach it.
The cookie jar for me in 2021.
Yeah. Not a lot of people understand where lenders' money comes from. And it, you know, I'm definitely not an expert on it, but it's kind of fascinating how the terms are really set a lot of times by where the lender's capital comes from. Banks, you know, capital come from deposits. You know, the agencies come, you know, it's government bonds or, you know, whatever the mystery cash is. So you guys do have, you know, quite good terms on short-term debt. Can you speak about your capital source and how that plays into y'all's advantage?
Yeah, absolutely. And not only where a source of capital comes from will depict certainly like the economic terms, but also like just the ability for what can be written, you know, how flexible somebody could be or not. How quick they can get up and down or not. So it is really important to know your lender and understand sort of how they work, how they're capitalized and so on and so forth. I think, Will, to answer your question, probably the best way to describe and help people understand, you know, how a lot of lenders work, certainly including us, is there's two things that are often thrown around that most people don't quite fully understand. And that's the two words of capital markets and secondary markets. So I'll try and explain this smoothly. The easier one to describe is the secondary markets. Secondary markets is essentially when a lender will fund a loan today and they will sell it secondarily after closing to another loan buyer. That's the secondary market. So that's literally from a lender originates a loan and then sells it off to usually some form of an institutional investor, or you see a lot of these big mortgage REITs you know, or debt funds essentially that will just buy the paper, as they say. So that's the secondary market. Capital markets, it can be intertwined. Sometimes secondary markets is mixed in it, but not to confuse you, capital markets for the most part is where lenders get their financing to then get the money to write the loans. So, you know, within the capital markets, there's a lot of like debt fund facilities, warehouse facilities, repo lines and things of that nature. So it's essentially where a lot of the financing comes from in things that back lenders. So, you know, how do we work? We work in both realms. You know, we have a ton of equity behind us. We're backed by very large hedge fund and a publicly traded REIT. So we got a ton of money behind us. And then in order to provide our operators with the best cost of capital and allow us to control the right deals the way we know that they should be written, we use a myriad of sort of those two options. The important thing with Lima One Capital is regardless of what we do on the back end, you will always see and have an experience and relationship with Lima One. So what I mean by that is there's a big differentiation to somebody who might sell a loan in the secondary markets that is called servicing released versus servicing retained. We service all of our loans no matter how we finance them on the back end. All right. So you always deal with us for the good and certainly any of the bad or the customer complaints on payments and da 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 da. But the important thing on like a value add bridge is our construction management is in house too. You know, a lot of operators don't understand the importance and of relationship between you and the construction management department and a lender, because they're literally holding the purse of all your CapEx holdback. So if a lender sells their loans servicing released, that means the construction management is done by a complete third party, irrelevant to who originated the loan. certainly not all lenders are like that. And we are not like that. We take a lot of pride in that, that we service all of our loans and manage the construction management. But that's important because, I mean, you're talking CapEx budgets that are hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars that you need access to recapitalize after you complete the work. And if there's not that, you know, ability for communication and relationship, it means you're going to have to put more money into the project before you can get some of it back out. So I think to tie the loop or close the loop and tie the knot on all of that, you know, it's really important to know, is your lender going to hold your loan and are you going to be in contact with them for servicing and construction management if you have a hold back and go through a draw process, or if you're going to have to deal with a third party servicer. I mean, one easy way to find out is what's the name of the servicer. And if it's not the same as the lender, you sort of know what's happening. So our servicing company is Lima One Capital because we service it all. And we know that allows us to create good relationships with operators, which is one of the most important things we can do.
Which I think on the buying, you know, going through that process, right, it's efficiencies because you're vertically integrated. It's calling someone, an internal team member, to make sure that it's going through, versus the last thing you want to do is call the person where the service is released, call them, and they have to call someone else. And you're just on hold going, like, these are things I think when you're in that short period to close, you're not thinking later down the line. But if you're, hopefully when you're listening to this podcast, you realize how inefficient that process can be. So it's taking that macro approach and seeing how quickly and efficiently in this, like you said, the long-term relationship of Lima One and Rand Cap.
Very, very well said. I mean, like, to put the point on it, like in my virtual background, that way is where my servicing team is. We could just walk right down the hall and get with them if there's any
in
questions or issues, anything like that. Yeah.
That's hilarious. So it, I mean, we're in a unique time period for real estate, right? The values have done nothing but go up. You know, it's a crazy time politically. The unemployment numbers are worrisome. There's still a lot of uncertainty around the virus. But what are your thoughts on just the housing market? Because you guys are very involved in single family as well, and you know, do single family construction. I believe you guys do multifamily construction as well. I mean, so you guys have a unique scope because you see what people are doing rather than what people are saying. I mean, what are your thoughts on just, you know, 2021, the market, you know, valuations? I know it's not necessarily a crystal ball answer, but just what are you thinking when you look at the housing market where it stands now?
Yeah, no, love the question. Certainly a lot of feedback to give, so I'll try and keep it. but like you said, so, and also to tout our products, fix and flip, unfortunately not multifamily construction yet.
Okay.
Should come later this year, but single family and up to about 10 units we can look to finance on the new construction side. Rental loans for single assets, rental loans for large portfolios, and then the multifamily bridge, which we certainly exhausted. The biggest thing that we got to focus on right now is like inventory. So single family side, absorption rates are the lowest they've ever been. You know, everything's flying off the shelves. And similar to multifamily, you know, I think there's some nuances that I can touch on where things are sitting in regards to, you know, inventory in some of the multifamily realm, but it's hard to find good assets. I mean, I know you guys as operators, you know, we talked a month or two ago, and it's freaking really hard. It's like looking at 1,000 deals to find a half of one. It's loosening and finding more opportunities now. But, you know, a couple other things that come to mind. Cap rates have been flat at the worst, better and decreased for the most part, which is crazy. Everybody thought cap rates start climbing. They haven't. Collections through COVID weren't that bad. You know, I think we started to see, I saw through NMHC's January 6th report, I think 150 basis points behind in collections to January of 2020, similar trend in December. So collections might be trending a little bit along in the wrong way, but with the talked about stimulus package or another one coming through, hopefully that helps. You got urban flight, you sprawl to the suburban areas. And look, I think this year it's going to be a good ride. I think there's going to continue to be opportunities, and I don't think you're going to see severe distress. You know, the government's going to keep propping things up, whether stimulus or other laws. And I think state levels and even municipality levels are going to follow suit with that. I would like to think they're going to get more control as we got a better understanding of what's going on. At the same time, there's certainly downside risk. I mean, I think we'd be sort of naive to say there isn't. But I think the short term will be good. I think things are going to hold up very well. It's going to, you know, with the foreclosure moratoriums and all that type of stuff, that whole wave of potential foreclosure or further modification, distressed properties coming through. Again, it's going to be a while because of the moratorium. And that stuff just takes time. I mean, you know, in states where I'm near, like New Jersey, even on the single family side, it takes over a year to foreclose on a property in New Jersey and single family. Like, it's crazy. So that stuff will come. But there's a lot of downside risk in the future tied to everything that we know going on. As you said, well, you know, the stimulus, vaccine, ability to put more vaccine out, the 700th wave of COVID, the performance and collections, unemployment, and all the things of the like. So it's interesting. It's still frothy out there in the market, which is also interesting to me. But yeah, that's what I'm seeing in the market as a whole. I could certainly talk a little bit more specifically in sort of transactional level if you'd like to.
I think just the, I think as an operator, it's that managing that downside risk. In the acquisition side, obviously, if you're buying in New Jersey, that's much different than Tennessee or Nashville, because literally those people in New Jersey have sold everything and fled and are buying down in the Southeast, right? California, people are moving east to Austin or Utah. So I think it's, as an investor, when you hear Nate's macro, think of where you are and have it kind of align with where people are going, that net migration piece, and then kind of look deeper into those collection reports. Because we as a portfolio in East Tennessee and Kentucky have had really strong collections, knock on wood. So it's just continuing to see it, but in two, like Nate said, you know, collections have dipped, and I saw a headline at $70 billion in unpaid rents. Well, if you look at, I mean, Tennessee has been strong, but if you imagine the New Yorks, the Californians, those are the markets you have to kind of just dive deeper in and really understand and know where you're going.
Yeah, I think I learned this from the way smarter than me, John Burns, the sort of housing economist. An interesting way to see what's going on with migration is if you look at price out of U-Haul going from like New York to Atlanta, and then price it from going from Atlanta, New York, it's like a significant fraction of the cost to go back up north than it is to go down south. So, you know, that type of tricks can give you a little bit of insight on, you know, how to analyze it. But the other thing, practically speaking, you know, I think, as you said, to protect against downside risk, let me start by saying this. I've run credit for multifamily bridge lending before. I've never seen a pro forma that didn't look good. All right. So don't get me wrong. Never seen one that didn't show a favorable property after the business plan was executed. Right. But within that, I think that's practically how you protect against downside risk. I mean, your assumptions need to be more conservative. You can't expect the same, you know, cap rate compression, collections, economic, you know, occupancy, vacancy, all that stuff. You got to be conservative in your assumptions. And that's practically how you protect against downside risk. Because I'll always say that if you model out conservatively and things are better than that, you're going to be even more favorable than your conservative analysis. And it sounds like you probably bought the deal based on that conservative analysis. So that's where you turn doubles and triples into home runs and grand slams for sure. But it starts practically with being more conservative.
Yeah. So one of my favorite economic thinkers is Howard Marks. And he talks about quite frequently right now how we're in a lower return, higher risk market. Probably the lowest return, highest risk market he's ever seen. And I don't know the exact phrasing he uses, but it's something of where we're moving forward cautiously. It's like, that's their investing theory. So I think it's very important right now to just be aware of where we are in terms of, you know, the last 20 years for real estate investing, that the interest rates are low, returns are slightly lower. There's, you know, it's harder to find the same yield. And at the same time, there is slightly more risk in the market. So you can still find phenomenal deals. I mean, we've funded loans of people that are doing 20% IRR, that are doubling their money in a couple of years, but you have to be very, you have to know what you're doing and be cautious and conservative in your underwriting, and not, you know, underwriting taxes are going to stay the same. The cap rate's going to continue to compress. So there's still plenty of deals to be found. And, you know, we're seeing on the lending side, I think I'm going to ask you about the transactions you guys are seeing. But just being aware that the environment we're in, where it's, where, you know, lower returns, slightly higher risk, and make sure you're placing your capital accordingly.
Yeah, man, you said it very well, very well.
I'm paraphrasing, yeah.
You'll call you an economist sooner than later. So, you know, what we're seeing too, trend-wise, it's an interesting question, just a couple of quick trends that come to mind. Our loan amount size has been down on average in the multifamily realm. I haven't been able to put a finger on it, but it's come down a little bit. We've seen a lot of smaller-ish deals starting to trend back up. But again, I don't know why, but that's something that we've seen. You know, and then the other thing, which, you know, factually saying is across the markets, but we've also seen it, is transactions are happening more on stabilized assets than especially like heavy value add ones. I think it's because there's been this continuous battle, and I don't think there's any winner, except maybe sellers, but there's a battle and dichotomy between buyers and sellers on pricing, right? There's been, there always is, that supply and demand. But at the end of the day, you know, cap rates have compressed a little or stayed flat in a lot of markets. I think sellers are winning for now. But as the distress comes about more and, you know, a lot of operators can't hit the debt yields of the debt, you know, lenders that they have on it, among other reasons for distress, I think you're going to see it shift back to the buy side a little bit. But for the most part, we're seeing more loans and more transactions on assets that are more stabilized than the ones that are heavy lift. And I think it's, everybody's just trying to scratch their head and say, you know, once I finish this business plan on a heavy lift deal, what the heck is the market going to look like at that point? And that's where, you know, I think we've continued to get some more clarity, but there's people, you know, being very cautious in stepping into those arenas.
Yeah. Could you touch on the debt yield quickly, and especially what you guys like to see on the debt yield?
Yeah. So great question. Debt yield is essentially the yield of the property or NOIs on the property compared to, like, as an interest rate to the loan. And so why lenders put this in place is they want to see a property performing and essentially an operator profitable so that their cash flow can support the loan, so that the lender doesn't get in trouble, and so that the operator's happy making a profit, right? So as far as like what we require, it very much can sway and move depending on what type of product we're looking at. Is it more stabilized or heavier lift? And then specifically what market? So we'll look at it on a going in debt yield. We have no requirements on a value add deal where there's CapEx requirements, like just none. So that's a big niche of ours. It, you know, if you're hearing that there's some concerns on the in-place financials, we could be a great fit for that scenario. On the takeout side, the exit, we very much just try to align with agency underwriting, right? Because for the most part, all of our takeouts is going to be some form of small balance agency, Fannie Freddie type of debt. And if it is some form of local bank, typically they're going to have at least similar terms to agencies, sometimes more flexible, sometimes not. But so that's sort of what we follow. And if you know much about the agency side, a lot of that is dependent on, again, the market that the asset's in and the asset itself. And then it changes as the market changes too.
One thing I know before the debt yield, I think the biggest thing that, Nate, you preach a lot, and you preached in our last podcast that you did together, is stress testing the deal, right? What does the bridge look like as you go? Is it year one executing versus year two? What is the bridge product if the leverage is lower, right? Getting into agency, because we all have an idea of, we're hoping for what agency it looks like, but we don't know. So it's just continually stress test. Hey, what happens if, you know, Nashville is supposed to get a 34% property tax increase? What does it look like? You can't underwrite for all those scenarios, but making sure that you have several different options, because that optionality is absolutely critical when it comes, because you never know what's going to happen a year or two from now. Because imagine all the people who had bridge in 2019 and then came due in 2020, right? So it's just making sure you have that optionality, because that can always, that's an asset that not many people, I think, take into consideration.
I mean, all I got to say is amen.
All right, before we go to our pro tip, let's take a moment to hear from our sponsor.
Is your money working as hard as you are? At RAM Partners, we partner with hardworking investors who are seeking true passive income through multifamily real estate. Partnering with RAND means transparent communication with our webinars, monthly statements, and newsletters. For more information, visit randpartners.com to register for our investor portal and to set up a call with our team.
And we're back. So, Nate, a lot of value, but what is your one investor pro tip to our listeners out there as they go through the markets today?
All right. Put me on the spot with this, but I'm going to go with the tried and true. Use your head and not your heart in making real estate decisions. Very likely, if you asked me that on the last podcast, I probably could have given that answer, but I think it's more relevant now. Make sure that you're, as you just said, Mike, stress test, look at things conservatively, don't use lofty and frothy assumptions, you know, and think with your mind and not with your heart. I think, sort of in tangent to this, people are doing some crazy things, you know, for better or for worse, a good amount of people have reported to me through during COVID and I've seen them do some crazy stuff. It's messing with us all mentally and emotionally. So to me, it just further reiterates again, my tried and true of make investment decisions with your mind and with some good logic behind it rather than with your heart and with your emotions, because there's a whole heck of a lot of stuff going on in this crazy world that we live in, but it is a great world that we live in. We live in a great country as well. And I think, Will, you said it, I am a big believer, regardless of the market, there's great opportunities. I think I'm actually going to steal this from a webinar I ran recently. It's not about timing the market. It's about time in the market. I think is a great analogy, stock market and real estate investment. So, you know, hopefully you can interpret what that means in your own. I won't go down that road. but that my tried and true is make investment decisions with the mind and not the heart.
I love that. And I think to kind of second that, it's both Warren Buffett's and Howard Marks. Part of their philosophy is not trying to predict the market, but betting on good companies and good products. And it's they swim in the right direction, whether the tide's with them or against them. They feel good of where they're swimming. I love that. But if anyone had questions or wanted to reach out to you directly or learn more about Lima One, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Yeah, find me on social media. Just simply my name, Nathan Trunfio. Find out more about Lima One simply at limaone.com. If you want a loan from us, talk to Will. he'll best serve you for sure. And my email, if you want it, is my first initial of my first name, and Trunfio, my last name, at limaone.com.
We'll have that in the show notes. And there you have it, another episode of the RAND series show. Nathan is the truth. So if you have any questions for him or Will, the Finance Right duo, but if you have any questions for us, please reach out to us at info@randcre.com. Until then, we'll see you next week.
Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.